Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, hello. I am the one and only Dr. Shawande Mustakeem, and it's time for another class roundup. I think we're in about week 6, week 7, but I titled it today, Icons Reinvoked, from Lizzie Borden to Frankie Baker, because that's where we are post-fall break. Students, everybody had to get a little rejuvenated. And now, and coming back today, the conversation and the visuals on both sides for both classes, they were rich. They were necessary. They were engaging. And that's what I'm really trying to do, to create the deeper learning, these environments where, wow, I hadn't considered. So for those who are tuning in for the first time, I am teaching for the first time, piloting a Women in Crime and the Evolution of American History, and then another class that I developed 10 years ago called Mapping the World of quote-unquote Black Criminality. So within the Mapping the World of quote Black Criminality, we finished the 1985 film, The Color Purple. I got to tell you, I'm standing at quite the interesting place in my life to be teaching, screening a film that came out when I was like 7 years old. Woo! And then to see how students were responding through different scenes within this very iconic film. You see, again, this is why I titled it today's conversation, Icons Reinvoked. Icons represent people, and icons can represent moments and movies and moods, and they also can represent just something seen and unseen across generations and across centuries. So, again, just to sort of start off, first class, we're moving on into, or finishing, I should say, we finished The Color Purple, and now within the Women in Crime class, we had just finished screening the 1975 TV series, which really kind of was like a movie, The Legend of Lizzie Borden. And I was thinking about it before I came on because, look, the cool part about all of this is that I am rushing home from teaching every time to come and move the needle on these conversations. And it was just so fresh in my mind as students are like, wow, thank you for the learning. This is really opening my mind where I'm now more able to see and understand the world happening around me. That says a lot. So within Women in Crime, we went back to the Lizzie Borden case of 1892, and we read a Rolling Stones article that is helping me in this whole, I'm trying to move this needle in the conversation about those who encompass what I call the blurred and are commonly forgotten, these female icons and female legends. But again, where is the memory blurred and where is it stuck? So there's a Rolling Stone article that students read that came out in 2016 by Elizabeth Yuko, and it's entitled Lizzie Borden, Why a 19th Century Axe Murder Still Fascinates Us. And it's a really timely, interesting reading, even now, to read it in 2022, as we're all asking, what is the fascination? What is it about her? What is it about the story? And within it, we're getting a sense of this celebrity life, this fascination with the wealthy. Oh, gosh, could they be capable of murder? So a lot of that came up in the conversation as 6 students were leading conversations today in class. We moved from Lizzie Borden to Frankie Baker, as well as starting another iconic, we're starting iconic book by Professor Callie Gross, and the book is entitled Colored Amazons, and it's looking at Black women and crime and violence within Philadelphia from the 1880s into like the first couple decades within the 20th century. So we covered a lot of ground, and we did it in time to go from Lizzie Borden, 1892, and then to look at Frankie Baker. Okay, another icon that a lot of people, I'm realizing, have very little understanding about Frankie Baker, and yet she is everywhere. She's the reason why I know her, because I walked past a bookstore, and I saw this book, Murder and Mayhem in Missouri, which the students were reading a chapter from that particular book that is written by Larry Wood, and they read the chapter that was entitled Two St. Louis Legends. Stagger Lee shot Billy, and Frankie and Johnny were sweethearts. Again, that's from Larry Wood's Murder and Mayhem in Missouri. And so through that, the students, I wanted them to focus on who is Frankie Baker, how did she become an icon, and then yet, is she known? Because we assume that icons we know, but then what about the most unknown icons? So for those that don't know, I'm going to sort of tell us really quick, because I think that it's very interesting to look at the icons of at least two states, icon from Massachusetts, Falls River with Lizzie Borden, and then to look at an icon of Frankie Baker, who in a whole other lens we get the detonation of violence, but within the name of self-defense. So on a certain level, some could argue, because I encourage you to go look up the story of Frankie Baker. We all should know, because some of us should be ashamed in how we've buried her memory, but then we invoke as we need, almost even commercially. But that said, I mentioned that I passed by the book. I saw it in the window, and it was her picture. And ironically, it was her picture that the St. Louis Post-Dispatch has in their archives. And, okay, Frankie Baker. At the time, it didn't really register, but then yet, yes, I've heard of the song Frankie and Johnny. So there are over 300 iterations of the song Frankie and Johnny that connects back to a St. Louis murder, a murder that happened, and it was ruled justifiable homicide for in the name of self-defense, where Frankie defended herself. There's a lover's quarrel that emerges, and her cheating boyfriend, they got into it a little bit, and words were exchanged, and he allegedly threw a lamp at her and pulled out a knife and threatened to cut her, and she pulled a gun out and shot him. And he fell down the steps and ended up, in fact, dying on his mother's couch, some would say. And she would, again, justifiable homicide, ruled by the St. Louis coroner's inquest, and yet she would get off. So meaning that if she had been charged with murder, she would have went to the penitentiary. But instead, she was freed, and she would be therefore forever haunted by the song that was already taking storm while this whole case is playing out. But nonetheless, again, this is in the fall of 1899. You have Frankie defending herself, and then within mere months, you would have a musician who, musicians do what? They remember musicians. She ended up killing a musician, and another musician ended up writing a song in commemoration, and so thus the beginnings of what will become Frankie and Johnny. So it's interesting that there's a Johnny Cash version, there's a Sam Cooke version, there's the Elvis version, there's all the different versions. But what I really wanted the students to understand is, who holds the power of memory? Who is interested in telling the story? What is the role of the artist? Is the artist supposed to tell you every full part of the story? Do we get to sort of change it up for cultural needs and artistic needs? Over time, how has each generation approached this song? This day and age, I think I would love to hear a new version of Frankie and Johnny, but let's get to the truth. Let's get to the real truth of it. I mean, again, this black woman would live forever haunted by this song. Wherever she would move, people would somehow figure out that she was one connected. And so for her to die within a mental institution where that was the one thing she could remember, the only thing, some would argue, she remembered that in clear detail what happened decades before in 1899. Her story is just remarkable. And again, for those who want to go deep, as we're looking at who are the icons that are connected to St. Louis, she's the most unknown icon. How dare we go on about Frankie and Johnny and then not really try to get at who Frankie Baker is? Total movie waiting to happen. And then let me tell you, I've uncovered even more. I uncovered one of her neighbors who did the same thing she did. We don't know anything about her neighbor. So you got to stay tuned for that, because there's going to be even more that I'll be telling you about, like, these holes, these voids in our memory, they're not on accident. And then yet, do we really need to have someone to blame it on? Who do we put the fault of memory on? Where are you in pushing your limits of learning? Again, pop culture is doing the job of most of us, holding, preserving, shaping, ever-shaping memory. And some of us just aren't aware of it. Well, we really should be. Again, I know in the past episode, I was reminding us that Lifetime seems to have a life contract on the Lizzie Borden story. Wah, wah. But there's so many other icons that we should know. And then we got to really get at the question of when and where and how to do they or should they ever fall in the curriculum. And then how far does a curriculum go? Just think about that for a moment. Curriculum is often dictated by somebody else. And I don't live my life bound to a curriculum of others. It becomes the integration of other things that I want to learn to go even deeper and deeper and deeper, because what if what you're talking about is not even the full truth? So as people say, yeah, I know, we know, over time we are going to have to think about not only the future of memory, but, Anne, who is a part of this archive of memory? And then also, where are we in the commercializing of memory that's happening all the time in all these different directions? Look at the ghost industry. Ooh, how and who we choose to find value in the Remembrance Project. So a lot of this, it was just a lot of ground that we covered today, really thinking about what is a celebrity. We know the so-called modern understanding of the celebrity, but what did it look like historically when someone committed a crime and then to go to jail? What makes them a celebrity? And that got us into a deeper conversation thinking about class, because, sure, I think the lore is a wealthy woman allegedly getting away with murder. And so our assumption is that crime and violence happens only among the so-called impoverished, the poor, the unable, incapable. And that's interesting over time as we're seeing politically the invocation of, it's all about crime. Don't we hear that now? Yeah. And then who is crime associated with? Where and how do we think about crime and class? Because we damn well think about race and crime, because we've got to look at, or we should, look at the different tiers, gender and crime, race and crime, sexuality and crime. There's so many different angles. So it was interesting to go between two icons and then to move to a phenomenal book that has helped me to get where I am in my thinking about the past in this landscape of female criminality, and this is Dr. Callie Gross's book, Colored Amazons. So now we're moving into her book to think about the outplay of violence within Philadelphia at the turn of the 20th century and the end of the 19th century. And so up until now, students have gotten a full immersion on Missouri, as we're also moving into icons and other aspects of females, crime, justice, and the evolution. And so even in reading the introduction through chapter 2, we were talking a lot about legacy, thinking about money, and also thinking about the role of media. I can't say that enough. So to go back with the Lizzie Borden case, we went and looked up the Lizzie Borden iconic song that's connected with, you know, giving the wax to her father and all that. So we found like a 28-second, well, it said nursery rhyme. So it's interesting how it's remembered. People remember it, but then how? On another website, we saw it as, oh, you should skip rope to the Lizzie Borden song. Like, ooh, who wants me skipping rope to that? So then with Frankie and Johnny, we went and listened to the Johnny Cash version as well as listening to the Sam Cooke version. We didn't listen to the Elvis version, but it was interesting because I wanted the students to see how drastically that the story had changed because of the power of the media. So as we're thinking now about the past, the role of the media takes even greater stage because of the evolution of media itself, and then also what we do with it. Are we reading newspapers? Is that really what's galvanizing the audience? No, it looks like TikTok and Instagram and Twitter's got all that. So then we have to think about what is the evolution and the access to a lot of this. So that was interesting. We have a couple musicians in the class, and I found myself having to ask, hey, what's the role of the artist? What is the role of media? What is the role of the future? Are we expecting artists to act like your local librarian? How's that going to work? And is that going to keep you fully engaged? So like I said, it just got interesting as we're fusing pop culture and music. Today was a day connected with music and history and also just the makings of female icons and also maybe the unmaking of some. Because then to see that someone becomes more white over time, although the story is of how did we get there? And then that just goes back to how are we teaching it so that way it's understood that this is an artistic representation of a moment that mattered, that has evolved. So I really do. I hope in the future that you will take serious some of what the students are being encouraged to think about. Again, the power of remembrance from the curriculum to music to possible nursery rhymes, but just with childhood connection of songs and tragedy, thinking about what do we know about Lizzie Borden? Does anyone really know Frankie Baker? We also got into a longer, thornier issue, I'll say, about institutional connections to these tragedies. Just as universities are now studying slavery, there are universities that are connected to other realms beyond carceral spaces, death. And we have to think about accountability. What is that going to look like? You know, the call out is the call out. You know, who are we to demand? You should own up to it. What does that mean? And then will that change the future? Their access? The access that you may give to other people on these stories? So, or on these narratives of the global past, the American past? But what I hope all of this is doing is turning the wheels over for a lot of us to think about the heavy influence of pop culture and then the persistence of memory. It's happening. Sometimes it's fractured. It's generational. And that generational part is what I kept also thinking about. Like, each generation assumes that the next either does know or will know, but there's no follow-up. Our parents' generation is not going to follow up to make sure that we know what they know. They're only going to tell us what they know or, you know, influence us in those ways. So I encourage us just to probe deep, to think culturally what has been at the center of knowledge, of memory across generations, who and what and how. Where are we going? And that was the other thing that we got into, thinking about value and memory. What can the future look like? I had even threw out like, oh, you know, since ghost tours are all in, what, all of a sudden are we going to see a hologram of someone who was formerly incarcerated? Like, whoa, then who owns that hologram? Who gets the money? And the money has been coming up a lot more from Jesse James with the museum, as well as a bed and breakfast with Lizzie Borden, where you can go and stay in the house where the murder allegedly happened. Who's making money? Where's the money going? How's it going to go? And, hey, does it matter? Does it not? Are we thinking about it? We should, because, again, the commercializing of memory and memory making is really just getting started. There's going to be this whole evolution that is coming. A good bit of us aren't even going to be aware because I'll say, oh, yeah, well, we know. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody knows that. There's a whole lot to know. So, again, I am the one and only Dr. Shawnee Moosekeem, and I'm racing on so you can hear what's been going down in the Moosekeem Fall 2022 classes between Women and Crime and the Evolution of American History, as well as Mapping the World of quote-unquote Black Criminality. We have several more weeks ahead. However, we have covered a lot of ground getting up to this far. Next week within the Women and Crime class, we are going to continue our conversation of Dr. Gross's book, Colored Amazon, and then within the Mapping the World of quote-unquote Black Criminality, we are going to have a week-long conversation on the Pulitzer Book Prize, Winfried Rimbert's book, Chasing Me to My Grave, which is a powerful artistic view of the past, remembrance, family, evolution, and the power of memory through art, and this just like almost art from another world. So I'm excited about all of what is coming, and I hope that you continue to stay tuned in so you can be all the way tuned up and empowered in all the necessary ways. Again, I am the one and only Dr. Shawnee Mustakeem coming on for another class roundup. You'll catch it on You Never Know What Day of the Week, but just want to keep you in the know on what is coming. The students in the future, they're going to be blogging. There's just going to be a lot more digging up the past so that way the future can know and remember. So again, we were talking icons reinvoked from Lizzie Borden to Frankie Baker, and we are just getting started. So right now, I'll talk to you soon, and you know that I will, of course, empower you soon. All right, bye-bye.